Hello, and welcome to Climate Cheesecake. I'm Rachel Oh, a sustainability professional who has worked in various industries, including aquaculture, carbon markets, and now presently in corporate sustainability and ESG investing. Climate Cheesecake is brought to you by the Cheesecake Collective and powered by Artway Studio. If you like our content, please subscribe and give us a positive review where you get your podcasts. Hi everyone, just a quick introduction so that all of you know who our amazing guest is. Evelyn Ng Lim is a self-taught farmer and the former co-owner of the Green Circle Eco Farm in Lim Chu Kang. In 1999, she and her husband transformed this 2.2 block of land that was littered with construction waste into the Green Circle Eco Farm, and that is one of Singapore's last remaining permaculture farms. And in June 2022, Evelyn gained visibility when she launched a social media campaign to save her food forest from redevelopment and to extend her lease.
So I'm Tirin. I found out about your jungle party at your farm.
Yeah. Oh, you were there?
I was there, yes.
Okay.
And we were just there visiting the farm. Then that's when I first learned about your petition. Then I think I dropped you a message while I was away to illustrate like what was your farm doing, what the petition was about, how people could find out more. Because I think a few farms were affected at that time.
Oh, you were doing the wild.
I called you. I remember I called you. So now we're here doing this whole season. Yeah. Well, our podcast is about food. Very excited to have you here.
Okay, thank you.
Could you tell me more about yourself and maybe more about the farm also? Because I've never been there before. Didn't get the chance to, but could you tell me more about it?
Well, I actually never thought that I'll be a farmer at all. But it was like in sometime in 1997, you know, I was in Nature Society as a part-time volunteer,
right,
then a full-time volunteer. I really enjoyed, you know, being with Nature Society because I'm an outdoor person. But I go there more for the adventure, enjoying the outdoor. But later on, when I got to know some of the more scientific people there, you know, we had a professor from botany department, some lecturers from the university. Then I really got to learn, to understand, you know, about biodiversity. I learned about food chain, food web, even in primary school, but I never understood, you know, the implication. Then we all realized that we are losing a lot of nature areas. Yeah. So a few of us thought that, you know, we should actually be more professional.
Right.
And so I became full-time and set up office for them, advocate for...
So you were, if they have an office, it's because of you.
Then 1997, that was about the time that where I thought I should move on. I saw in the papers that a consignment of vegetables had been rejected, you know, by the authorities because of the pesticide level had exceeded the allowable limit. And so I was a vegetarian. And I just think to myself, how can I be eating all these vegetables? You know, sometimes some of this consignment might have escaped detection,
yeah,
you know?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's how I decided, you know, that I should take control of what I eat. So what to do? Thinking what to do. I can't get organic vegetables. You know, at that time, there were one or two shops selling organic, but they were all dried food stuff and packaged stuff. But you don't have any fresh vegetables or fruits at all.
Right.
Yeah. So I decided maybe I should grow my own food. And I can imagine living in the farm. I decided, I should become a farmer. And that's how I started, becoming
like
a farmer.
You know, when you give me a problem, I'll solve it myself.
How did you even find the land? I remember seeing it was 2.2 hectares. How big is it?
Dude, one football field is less than a hectare. So 2.2,
it's about four or five. Yeah.
How do you find a piece of land?
I used to drive around and then go to the rural areas and had a chance upon some farms there. So I was thinking, the authority, I should ring them up. So I rang up. I say, is there any land that I can use for farming? I say, yeah, we tender out land and all that. Just wait for the tender to come out and then you can tender for it. Yeah. So I waited, you know, waited so long.
How long did you
wait? I was wondering how come. Then they say, oh, they have to tighten up the rules because some people who tender, you know, the first few batches that tender, they were not really into farming and they were doing all kinds of funny things there. You know?
I see.
you know, they were accepting, they were building like illegal structures to house illegal migrants in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, took almost 2 years, you know. But then in the meantime, I took that time off to look around to find out about organic farming because I really had no experience at all in farming. I was just going to plunge into it like that. So that 2 years make me think, you know, wow, it's going to be quite a lot of finance that I need, you know, and I really got to be careful. But then later I found out, oh, you can build a house and just stay there. So that relieved me a bit because I can sort of rent out my house. Because most of the organic farms in Hong Kong, Malaysia, and all that are not making money, but some of them make ends meet by having education. So I thought that's what I should do also.
Right.
Yeah. And anyway, as soon as the tender came out,
I just
went in.
Right. Yeah. You had a plan already. I was like she did a whole cash flow project.
When I visited your farm, people kept calling it a food forest.
Mm.
But I never understood what you talked about organic farming. Is there a reason why you would call it a food forest rather than an organic farm?
Yeah, because as the years go by, and at first, you know, I was like imitating also the standard way of growing, you know, rows of vegetables neatly placed and all that. And then when the weeds came out, as the workers start uprooting the weeds, then I get a bit concerned because I know, if it rains, all that loosened soil is going to get washed away, all my compost, all the natural fertilizer that I just put in. I was like, what to do? I said, in the end, I was telling myself, do the weeds take that much fertility off from the planted vegetables? Aiyah. Never mind about the weeds. I can control it by just making sure that it doesn't overwhelm the plants that I want. And then later on, I realize that the weeds, some of them are edible. So it's all this concern and working with nature. And then if I'm about to get rid of the weeds and I see honeybees and all that coming and then hovering around the flowers, trying to get nectar and all that, how can I remove it? When we in Nature Society were lamenting already that there are less and less bees around already. Then I found out, this plant that I saved because the bees were there is Azistacia. It can be eaten as an alternative type of greens. So it's this working together, observing nature that I slowly and instinctively, you know, build up the layers to have a forest. And people all come to me and say, how can your garden be so untidy? your farm so untidy?
It's a forest.
So many weeds and all that around. And at first I was I was sort of apologetic sometimes. Mm. But then after that, I stood my ground when I became more conscious.
Yeah.
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 So I was able to explain better to people. But even then, people would just say,
I can imagine. Because even when I was there, it didn't look like a conventional farm, which is what I grew up knowing that farm looks like that. And then suddenly your farm was so different. But I remember when I reached the area, it was so far where I lived. I didn't even know this place existed. And then when I got there, I was like, whoa, there are so many things to see. There were plants, there were vegetables. And it felt weird because when I went to your farm, that was sometime last year, I remember. And they were also talking a lot about, you know, all the agri-tech, wanting to accelerate all those kinds of like hydroponics and other kind of high-tech farming, which makes me also wonder what you think about in a place like Singapore where there's land scarcity, right? What is the role of a soy-based farm? Like, what do we stand to lose by losing soy-based farms in Singapore?
Well, you see, it takes a community. So you have the above ground ecology, the underground ecology, and then the underground ecology, the microbes are very important. You see, if you turn to soilless farming and all that, the microbes are going to be very much reduced. The soil microbes, you know, so much variety, so much diversity, and it's so much related to our health, because you know, the microbes in our gut, actually, you know, is supposed to be the first brain, and it's responsible for a lot of our bodily functions. Yeah. So if you go into indoor vertical farming, even now already, scientists and researchers have found out that most city folks, you know, the gut diversity of microbes and the quantity is so much reduced. Yeah. And it's affecting our health.
Mm.
And so if you go into high tech, it just doesn't work. Why produce vegetables that are of lower quality? Yeah, no doubt in a way we say that we are land scarce, but it's actually a priority. Mm. Why are we having so much land for highways, for roads? But I must say that NParks Board is doing a good job in having this idea that it is a city in nature. Mm. And so they are designing, you know, public footage and all that, wherever they can plant. It's all of making it more biodiverse. Yeah? If that's the policy, why not also, doesn't it apply to farming as well?
Yeah,
we should have, I'm not saying that, you know, we shouldn't go high-tech vertical farming. You can have it, but there must be a balance of soil farming and vertical farming. Yeah. After I had to leave the farm and my present house, I'm about the fourth owner, and it had already all been paved. There's hardly any space for gardening. I told my husband I want to dig it all up. He says, you're crazy. So he says, it'll be such a mess. And he's got asthma and all that. So I said, okay. So I look out, the 5-foot way. Oh, good thing there was a neighbor also who also plants. So I decided, that means that we can plant also. So when we were about to exit the farm, I had all my soil. Before the expiry, my friends were telling me, sell off the soil, sell off your compost.
Yeah, but I had good compost.
but I had no heart to do it because I was thinking that my appeal, you know, it might work. I might have a chance. I was waiting till the last, but then when it come the last minute, it was too late to do much about it.
Right.
So all I could do was take those available and then put it along my 5-foot way. And I created a food forest. Now, if you don't have extensive big piece of land, you can also do it like I do in my 5-foot verge. You can plant for a big space, you can have 7 layers, which is a forest. Usually has got 7 layers. 5 layers in multiple 5 layers, then 1 layer, which is the root layer, and then the vines is the other layer. So in a small area, maybe you can have 3, 4, 5 layers, it's okay. So long as you try to make it as biodiverse as possible. Yeah, but I sometimes feel a bit discouraged because neighbors complain. Some neighbors, not all, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. you going to encourage snakes to grow there?
Snakes.
Yeah. And it's not that, it's not that wild, actually. We are so used to being so urbanized that we are so scared and we fear, you know, when things are not in a prim and proper place, you know. You don't let things grow a little bit wild here and there. But we need that wild spirit sometimes, you know.
I feel like that really, because when we talk about high-tech farming and all, I understand we need more food. I understand that. I understand we want to be more food secure. I understand that tech-based farming gives us an opportunity that maybe soy-based farming can't. But it's like what you said, there are all this intangible value that is not being measured. You know, when we just measure, I see reports, they just measure output is how many tons of food, how many tons of food. But food is diverse also. And a farm does more than just produce food. Like you said, it creates a forest, it creates biodiversity. And then I also read in articles before as well that when students come to or you provide these educational tours, people come and you teach them to fear nature less, exactly what you said. Like the,
or fear more, maybe.
Fear more.
both are equally good.
Or like get used to a different type of garden or get used to a different type. I mean, if we want to be in a city, if we want to be a city in nature, I guess, you know, this is one of the first steps. And I wish we can, you know, start valuing, you know, farms not just in output. I know it's important, but you know, learn to appreciate another type of importance as well.
I guess for me, the biggest takeaway is that we really need also a diverse form of creating food in Singapore. And for people who don't know about Evelyn's farm, there's a lot that you can read online about it.
Yes,
and we've learned so much just by talking to you here. So thank you for taking time. Yeah. It's been really great talking to you.
Okay, thank you.
Climate Cheesecake is brought to you by The Cheesecake Collective, empowered by Artwave Studio. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Climate Cheesecake. So go follow us.